Hello and welcome to episode 1 of Engaging Internal Comms, the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with new ideas and innovations in our profession. Hello, I'm Craig Smith from the Big Picture People. We're planning on running the Engaging Internal Comms podcast in seasons, and each season is going to have its own theme. Over this first season of Engaging Internal Comms, we're going to be talking to a wide range of experts and practitioners who are innovating and challenging the received wisdom, but really making a positive impact in the internal communications and employee engagement arena. Our aim is to explore areas that are off the beaten track and that we may not normally associate with internal communications and employee engagement. We're going to be looking at areas like organizational purpose, employee well-being, branding, age diversity, experiential learning, etc. And the people who we're going to be talking to are going to be looking at these areas from non-traditional angles. So if you're looking to broaden your horizons in the world of internal communications and employee engagement and get some new ideas, this is going to be a great show for you to listen to. An area I've always found personally fascinating is the connection between an organization's external brand and its internal brand. The way that we bring to life our external promises to our customers and how that reflects with how we treat our employees, I think, is a really important matter. So in today's interview, we're going to be looking at this area in more detail. We're going to be looking at how brand connects to the values of the organization and how organizations can use storytelling to really bring that brand to life for their employees. We're going to be looking how marketing and HR and communications can form positive relationships with each other because there's sometimes a natural tension there. And we're going to be looking at the importance of leaders and managers really being brand examples within the organization. So I think for this first episode, we've got a really fantastic interview, and I think you'll find it really interesting. So here we go. Okay, so today I'm going to be talking to Arafa Hennigan, who is the head of brand and employer brand manager at the leading online retailer, AO.com. Now, Arafa has a career spanning lots of organizations. She's worked at Nestle, she's worked at Co-op, and more recently, she's had senior brand roles at Yorkshire Building Society and more latterly at AO.com. So I know I've seen Arafa speak before, and I know she's got a very interesting set of ideas around brand. And really is really passionate about this idea that the brand of the organization should be lived from the inside out, and that connecting the brand to people and what they do and making sure there's a consistent narrative is really important. So hello Arafa, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. You?
Yeah, good, thank you. And I believe you're in the northwest of England, I believe. Is it Manchester or Bolton that you live in? I can't remember which one it is now.
So I live in Rochdale, but okay. Work in Bolton. So, but we also have offices. Yeah, also have offices in at Manchester as well. So, northwest based.
Northwest based. Yeah. So I've got family across in the northwest. So it's in a nice part of the world. So yeah, good. What's the weather like where you are today?
It's cloudy, a bit cold, but there's no rain, which for me is a bonus living so close to Manchester that's all it does is rain here.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can vouch for that as well. Yeah. And anyway, brilliant. So we met at the IOIC conference going back now late 2018, so probably about 18 months ago when I first met you, and you were speaking about this whole idea of external brand and how it connects to internal brand. And that's something that's always really interested me because it's not a conventional area that I think that normally gets, you know, enough attention in IC and employee engagement. So I guess people listening to this, consumers, as consumers, we're all familiar with the kind of, you know, the Nikes and the Apples and the external brand idea. Well, tell me a little bit more about what we mean when we talk about internal brand. What's that? What does that mean to you, Arafa?
Yeah, so it's slightly different to internal brand. I just have a massive passion that brand starts on the inside. That for your brand to truly thrive on the outside, it has to be lived and breathed and fundamentally believed in on the inside first. And they're not two opposing ideas. So we used to talk about my team being the internal brand, and I would be introduced as she heads up the internal brand team, and I would go, no, I don't. I head up a brand team whose focus happens to be from the inside first. And that's something that I'm tremendously passionate about. Since we last spoke, actually, my role's slightly changed as well. So yeah. I'm now head of brand for the entire AO group, which means that I genuinely get to live and breathe the brand inside and outside through all and every single touch point that we've got. So, you know, really the business definitely believing in the fact that it's this one encompassing piece that needs to be one rather than separate pieces.
Right. So that distinction is that is your job title still head of brand and employer brand manager, or is that now just head of brand?
Head of brand. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Just
okay.
Head of brand. Okay. So internal communications and things like that has moved into slightly different directions.
Right.
Still work
okay.
really closely with them. Employer brand is also in a different area. And then I've got fingers and lots of pies all over the
yeah.
place. So
yeah.
it's a really small strategic team whose job it is to provide guidelines and guidance and processes and procedures to help the rest of the business live and breathe our brand. It's essentially
yeah.
what we're responsible for.
Okay. And you know, this is a great opportunity for you to tell us all about the AO.com brand. So in a nutshell,
yeah.
how would you embody that brand? How would you kind of, what's your sort of elevator pitch for the AO.com brand and how that links into how you expect your people to live that brand?
Yeah. So AO is a online retailer. But with a slight difference. So we're an online retailer that is completely responsible for the end-to-end journey for the customer. Mm. So we go from a website, we can come on and purchase electrical items. So anything from fridges, freezers, toasters, kettles, TVs, games, everything that you would expect from an electrical retailer. Mm. We then also own the logistics business of this. So we don't send it out to a third party. AO has a logistics arm to our business. So we're completely okay. responsible for all of that as well, including all of the warehousing. We deliver that. And then we also, towards the end of that journey, we also have recycling. So we can take away
wow.
your old appliances and recycle it down in our plastic and recycling plants down in Telford. So which is, you know, absolutely game changing for any kind of retailer, never mind an electrical retailer. So we're just in the process now of dead exciting stuff about, you know, what do we do with those plastics? Are we able to recycle them back into the system again to make them into fridges? Do we turn them into even simple things like pens and, you know, and tables and seats and yeah. So just some dead exciting, innovative stuff.
Yeah.
And that definitely summarizes what AO is. You know, we're a brand of innovation. We're a brand of challenging the norm, but genuinely doing it because it's the right thing to do from a customer point of view rather than because we want to show off. So
yeah.
it's all based on what the right thing for the customer is. Yeah.
And to be honest, I didn't know that. That's amazing. So to be fully have that full supply chain fully integrated into your own business and owning that it's very unusual. I guess it's very very brave. And I guess certain elements of that supply chain might be bits that might be more might generally be seen as being more commoditized, and you know might be the sort of thing that you would look to say, you know, from a cost basis, what does it make sense? So, but you've kind of made that sort of bold assertion that as an organization, actually, you know, the experience, I guess, when you get that, you know, that washing machine or that big TV delivered is actually as important as it was, I guess, in the, you know, as the sort of purchasing experience on the website and the whole interaction that you've had with the sales team. You kind of want to see that whole experience managed from, you know, even from picking up and recycling the old TV, which is really 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 brave. So how does that then, I guess, pan out into, you know, so in terms of your kind of delivery people, who are delivering these items, so how do you help them to really understand that kind of brand experience that is obviously so important to you, because you want them to work for you, and you know you don't want to be working with an outsourced courier company or an outsourced delivery company.
Yeah, 100%. The drivers are absolutely, you know, we're an online retailer, but so our drivers and the experience that you have with them is probably your only human touch point that you would have with AO. We, you know, if everything goes smoothly with our journey, which it does do in kind of 99% of the cases, you know, you basically, you go online, you order, and then there's a delivery. Very rarely do people, you know, people call up because there might be an issue with, they might have to change their delivery time. They might decide that they want a different item versus the one they ordered. But generally, you know, drivers tend to be the only people that our customers actually see. So ensuring that they genuinely feel like AO, it is really important to us. And that generally comes through because of the process that we go through when working with drivers, and ensuring that they understand what AO's values are. Our values are really important to us. The purpose is really important to us. And a lot of it as well is the whole understanding what other drivers do. We tend to find that, and even within our head offices as well, a lot of this is to do with nurturing that talent to begin with, you know, showing people how we do it. So in our call center, for example, we have an academy. Yeah. So they spend a huge amount of time just being wrapped in cotton wool and spending the time on them to make sure that they feel that they're kind of are able to act in a way that definitely feels AO, but almost contrary to that it shouldn't be acting. You know, it should be that you genuinely feel it inside. So if it feels like the right thing to do from a customer point of view, you do it because it's the right thing to do from a customer point of view.
Yeah,
we've got lots of stories that we share across the business as well, which is absolutely integral to making sure or helping people to understand what AO, why AO is so special. And we share stories all the time. And there are tons and tons and tons of delivery stories that we continue to share that just articulates what makes AO so special in a way that is relevant to their area. So there's stories like there was a story where there was a couple of drivers making a delivery, and they drove past a woman who was on her front garden with a fridge. So they stopped and said, "Are you okay? This is not her delivery. This is something separate." And they said, "Are you all right, love? Can we do anything to help?" And she said, "Another well-known electrical retailer won't bring my fridge into my house. They said it was too complicated and they wouldn't do it. And I don't know how to lift it. I can't lift it. And now it's just stuck on my front garden." So the drivers got out of their van and brought the fridge into her house because it was just the right thing to do. So, enabling our drivers to just act with integrity, to just make it personal and to do the right thing is something that just lives there. And we continue to share stories.
And that's a really, and I was going to talk to you about the stories because I remember you, we may get a chance to talk to you. You told a very, and you've probably got millions more that you've accumulated since then in the last 18 months. But I remember you telling a really, really profound story about somebody who, I can't remember the exact details, but it was somebody I'll let you tell that story perhaps in a moment. I made a note in my notes while you were talking at the conference about, you know, the importance of stories. And I completely agree with you. I think, you know, all of the work that the organizations do around values and trying to communicate values, and, you know, the whole thing around kind of, you know, wordsmithing this perfect set of values, which are usually integrity and honesty and all of these sorts of things. For me, the whole thing, you know, if you excuse the pun, where the rubber hits the road is what are the stories we tell each other about how we use those values. And I think that example there is brilliant example of this is what we mean. That is a great, you know, for our people, that is exactly the sort of thing we want you to be doing, the way we want you to be behaving, which is, you know, you can kind of imagine in your head them nodding and go, "Okay, I get it now. I kind of get what you mean when you talk about, you know, being present, being authentic, being, you know, being there for our customers." And then that's an amazing example when it's not even one of your customers you guys are willing to do that.
Yeah.
So how do you use stories then? Because I think it's one of those things that, you know, the amount of things I hear or read, which is, you know, we need to get better at storytelling. And then it's usually some sort of, you know, how to tell fairy tales type of thing, which I'm not in any way, you know, I believe in storytelling. How do you, is there a way that you actually use those stories in a structured way to get the kind of, you know, to get the power of them in the way that, you know, you've just told that story there?
So our comms team do, absolutely. You know, do they find a story and then tell it both internally and externally? Absolutely. And there definitely is a kind of a process to that. So they'll come across a story and then the kind of PR guys will work up Our internal communication team and external communication team are in the same team. So again, that link between inside and outside, it's born out from the same place, which is amazing again to be able to do that. So that is done in that way. We also just do it really informally. So there's lots of, have you heard, or have you seen this, or I've just seen this, happens quite frequently within the business. We also have a great storyteller in John Roberts, our founder and CEO. He tells amazing stories and is constantly telling them. So he does a monthly State of the Nation where he gets everyone together usually tells one or two stories in that as well. It's quite natural when it comes from and across the leadership board as well. Tend to do it in quite a natural way. And I think, you know, leaning on that point you made earlier on about authenticity, it isn't a tick box exercise. It isn't, right, this month we must produce 3 stories and fire them out externally. Tried it, it didn't work. Because actually it just felt so, you know, you're almost grappling to try and find the stories. Actually, you should just do it in a really natural way because it comes out anyway. We've got a brand new system at the minute called Yammer. I'm sure you're fully aware of Yammer. And that has just been a fabulous tool to create that real informal sharing of stories across the business. It's worked really well for us.
Yeah.
And it's definitely come into fruition over the past 6 or 7 weeks.
I can imagine. Yeah. I mean, just as a bit of context there, just for people who may be wondering what that means is we're talking in kind of May 2020 in the middle of the pandemic. So yeah, I can imagine that really has been an invaluable tool for you recently. So yeah, I really like that what you said there, which is I think you're right. I think organizations sometimes can take these stories and almost over polish them and over veneer them and then turn them into something that feels kind of a bit mass produced, and where the authenticity, and I one of the things I've always really enjoyed when I've worked with teams is to encourage them to just get into that habit of just sharing a story over something they've seen over the last couple of weeks that's kind of illustrative of what we're about as an organization and why you like working here. And I think that those authentic, natural organic stories are much better than the ones that we've put through the machine and vanillaized a little bit and made it sort of take the rough edges off it. So the story area, I'd love to, if you could just maybe briefly to summarize the story that you told at the conference, you remember what it was. It might have been one that it was around someone, I believe, who had made a phone call and they were in some sort of financial distress, and it was something that one of your call operators did to help them. I don't know whether you can recall that story.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably my favorite story of AO that just encapsulates what makes us so special. Story starts by a girl called Abby receiving a phone call in our call center. She works in the sales part of our business. So whilst we are primarily an online retailer, there's a telephone number that you can call up and place your order if you're not confident enough to finish the order online. So she got a phone call from an elderly gentleman called Gerald. So the guys are quite used to, they deal with customers like this on a daily basis. They're very used to helping people through the process of which product they need to buy and et cetera, et cetera. So Gerald called and said, I found this microwave. I really like to purchase it. And then started to tell her about, he had just recently been released from hospital after having, I think, a thigh infection. But a very serious infection in his leg where he'd been in hospital for quite some time. And he just arrived home and his microwave had decided to just go kaput. His carer, who comes in every now and again, don't know the details of that, had got his bank card but had put the wrong PIN number in the machine. So the card had been swallowed up, so he wasn't able to get any cash because the carer had gone to get cash so he could go to the shops to buy a microwave. Couldn't do it. And was essentially stuck and was really happy that he'd found this microwave. So Abby then, went through all of the normal due diligence and then got through to payment and said, okay, that's fine. Can you read me the long PIN number, the long number across your card, to which Gerald said, I don't have my card. That was the one that was chewed up in the machine.
In the ATM.
Went backwards. Yeah, went backwards and forwards about, have you got a different card? Have you got someone else that could do this for you? Long story short, had no alternative method of payment. And Abby very gently and kindly explained to him several times that she was unable to take this payment method. You have to give a sort code. You have to give the long number across the front of the debit card. You cannot pay by using a sort code. He didn't particularly understand what was going on. So she was trying very, very hard to explain this to him. And he was trying his hardest to try and get Abby to do this, but she couldn't. So she said to him, I'm going to put you on hold while I go and get some help for this. So this had been going on maybe 10, 15 minutes of her trying to explain, of trying to come somehow to try and resolve this situation for Gerald. So she came off the phone, and the next bit cuts to where Abby comes back on the phone and tells Gerald that as a goodwill gesture, AO are willing to pay for the microwave in this instance. Which was a wonderful thing. And Gerald got very emotional on the call and cried a little bit and said thank you. And it was very sweet. And it was a wonderful story. I think there are a few things, though, that kind of make this story even more special.
Yeah.
So one, we only heard from this story. It was a we monitor calls on an ad hoc basis. So, you know, we listen to telephone calls that happen to make sure that compliance is being adhered to. So we only find out about the call because of a compliance check. And the guys that were listening from the compliance team were saying, that's an amazing story. That's wonderful. When they did a little bit of digging on it to try and understand, you know, what happened at the end of this conversation, because they hadn't heard of what had happened, it transpired that AO hadn't paid for the microwave. Abby and her fellow colleagues that were around her had paid for the microwave. They'd all chipped in. I think the microwave was about 50 quid. They'd all chipped in a tenner and bought the microwave for Gerald. Had nothing to do with AO. She'd just come off the phone to ask her manager whether it was okay that she did that rather than asking AO to pay for it. So that kind of doing the right thing for a customer, and that's a very extreme example. But again, definitely demonstrates what does make AO so special. And for me, what makes it even more special is this is not face-to-face. This is not someone in front of you who's having a conversation with you and you can see the hurt in their face. This is over the telephone. So being able to get that connection with someone on a phone just shows kind of why our customer experience guys and sales guys are just so special.
It's fantastic. No, and I think the richness in a story like that you know, in the few minutes he's taking you to tell that story, is there is so much in that, isn't there, about the embodies that whole sort of message of what we're trying to get across, that would be so much more difficult to try and relay in other ways. It just really captures it. So fantastic. So no, that's amazing. So and I really want to, you know, I'd love to talk to you, share some more of these stories, because I remember that, and that was the one you told at the conference that kind of really affected everybody there, I think, really, in terms of, you know, kind of the power of that. One of the things I just wanted to touch with you is this you know, this idea of going back to your role, which is this look at the overarching head of brand. And I guess for a lot of people in the IC world, or, you know, there's different ways that people are organized within organizations, with internal comms and employee engagement. And so it's usually part of HR, and then brand is something that's normally owned by marketing or perhaps PR. And then there's this a little bit of a tension, and sometimes they're under the same banner. Sometimes, you know, marketing and PR have internal comms working with them. I guess the first question is there a tension? Does it sometimes feel there's like a bit of a tension between that? But if not, how do you think you manage that tension? Because sometimes the preeminence can maybe be towards the external brand, because that's the customers and that's people who kind of, you know, pay the bills at the end of the day, but also the alignment with the internal comms as well. And I've been in organizations, I've worked with organizations, both as an employee and as a consultant, where there clearly is a very different persona externally than the way that people are behaving internally. So I guess it's a very complicated question, but simply, I guess, how do you reconcile those two things? And is that something you've had to deal with in your career, either at AO or elsewhere? And how do you do that? How do you make sure those two bedfellows are comfortable, I guess?
It's probably fair to say that I've been the most comfortable where I am at the minute, and the structure that we've got at the minute, because there is very little tension in what we're doing. I think everyone's very clear what our lanes are. However, there is massive crossover in those lanes. And when you accept that there is crossover in those lanes, when you accept that on this piece of work, there are three of us involved, then you just get it done. You know, yeah. AO have a very, there's a real practicality in AO that's really interesting, given that it sells white goods. You tend to find this kind of, I would imagine, much more in FMCG. But within our world, it definitely, there's a need to just get some stuff done. And sometimes that isn't hierarchical, and it isn't written down on a piece of paper that's what you're responsible for. But if it feels right and it feels like this is part of your world and you want to be involved, stick your hand up and you can be involved.
Yeah.
How we operate at the minute is that, and it's quite different. When I took over this role, it was different previously. And then I took over this role and there was a slight restructure in how we did things. Mm. My team is a really small strategic team. It is not our job to do everything. And I think that can sometimes be a problem with a brand team, because with brand, because you touch everything, there's a tendency to want to be involved in everything and to sign off everything and to be part of everything. And the reality is that's what slows brand teams down, because you do not have capacity to do everything. Yeah. It's our job to do strategic direction and then to provide the guidelines, tools, hints and tips. Sometimes being a face in a room to get people in the right direction, that is what we have to be responsible for. In the past, in previous roles, there's always been a tension with marketing.
Yeah.
So how do you mix marketing and brand together? Who's responsible for TV, for example? Mm. Where we are at the minute, we do it together.
Yeah.
When it comes to internal communications at AO, we've probably found the best mix at the minute. So we have a director of communications. He's responsible for both internal and external communications, and he sits in the people team. So you have this real lovely mix of knowing that a focus is in people, but there's an absolute connection with the internal and external messages that go out. It's one and the same thing. You might be able to dial up slightly friendliness when it comes to internal messages versus messages to the market, for example, but it's born out of the same place. I work extremely closely with our director of communications to make sure that everything feels that joined up, and that we're ensuring that some of those brand messages are getting out there. But it's probably the most settled and as I say, smooth as I've known from a brand team actually for a really long time.
Fantastic. Yeah, and I guess it all comes down to that strategic choice that you've made, which is that your differentiation is around your people. It's the touch points within the organization. Because again, I guess looking at it, electrical retail is again, it's something that it could be seen. It's price comparison. It's all kind of commodity. Mm-hmm. To a certain extent, and to differentiate on service, like some of the better high street brands as what I've done as well, I think is really, really important. So
to differentiate on service and people for an online retailer is that is our differentiator. We could just be a blank face that you get no emotional connection with, that you don't understand, and you don't have to, but it's being able to have that emotional connection with a brand that is an online retailer for us, for me, is an absolute differentiator, something that makes us really special.
Yeah. So just, I mean, we're sort of time-wise, just one other thing I'd like to cover with you. So when I saw you talked about four areas that organizations can really focus on to help get internal and external brand, really get this alignment. So one thing was definitely about leadership involvement. We've touched on that a little bit. Really looking at the initiatives to support your culture, finding out what it is that sort of jars and rubs up against that whole purpose. I mean, I'd love to explore all these with you. The fourth one you talked about was that this the comms and experience, the communications experience your employees have kind of align with everything. I mean, what are maybe some of the more, I'm thinking about when we go back to the conversation I had earlier about drivers, and you've got people who work in call centers who, you know, stereotypically are probably people who are not, you know, challenging to engage, challenging to get this whole brand message across to, you know, they're people who've maybe worked at other organizations that haven't treated them so well, or maybe where that preeminence has been there. How do you deal with that in terms of bringing new people into the organization, getting that, really getting them to sort of inculcating them into that the way we do things at AO, when maybe they just see it maybe as a job, you know, just as a way of earning some money and paying the bills? How do you get them to really get that whole brand piece that you've developed at AO?
It's that they genuinely believe our purpose is true. So AO's purpose is to have a trustworthy smile in a world of uncertainty. No, it's not. That is our that's our promise. Sorry, that's our brand promise. Our purpose is to have the happiest customers by relentlessly striving for a better way. And it's the ethos, the part of that they have to feel, and they have to feel it in their day-to-day lives. So happiest customers, we talk a lot about happiest customers means internal and external. And whilst, you know, we're not expecting everyone to jump around for joy every single day that they come into work, because that's unreasonable, huh? This is actually about making sure that you've done the best that you can do, and to see that not only within your job, but seeing it across the rest of the business. So AO, try and make the place a good place to be. So, and you're right. For some people, it is a job. They just come in, do their job and go. But let's make sure that they're in a place that they actually enjoy being in. For me, it's that reciprocal part, isn't it? You can't ask someone to go above and beyond if you're not willing to go above and beyond for them. Yeah. So we want our people to do the best by our customers, but we have to make sure that we're doing the best by our people. So how AO have managed to do that in a way that feels really nice is that we have really lovely offices. We do free crisps and chocolate and pop for everyone that works there. We do fresh fruit and yogurt and a healthy fridge for everyone. We do a subsidized Starbucks. We have a subsidized kitchen. We have a spa, which is a fully working spa. You know, you can post letters at our office. You can receive parcels. You can send parcels out. So everything that we can do to try and make the experience that people that work with us as frictionless and as happy as possible is what we do for our own people, because we're expecting them to do the same for other people. You know,
brilliant.
For our customers, you couldn't expect someone who comes, say they work part-time in the call center, to treat, we have a couple of phrases in our business, is to make decisions our mum would be proud of, and to treat every customer like they're our gran. And in any other business, you would have, we act with integrity and we are personal. That's fine. But actually how AO say it is that make decisions your mum would be proud of and treat every customer like your gran. Unless AO makes it personal, they're not going to make it personal with the customers. So we make it personal by saying, it's a great place to work. We'll treat you really well. You'll feel like family. You know, we'll all be part of this one tribe. We're all going in this one direction. You're supported from the top. There's a lot of honesty and candor. JR, our founder, talks about candor without cruelty. You know, it's about being really honest, treating everyone like they're grown-ups, but doing it for the right reasons. So for us, what we ask people to do, we demonstrate.
That's brilliant. No, I really like that idea of empathy and you know, treat your customers like your gran. I think that was the paraphrasing. I mean, I remember we did some work for a client and they did that whole thing, which I thought was great, which was that whole, you know, walking a mile in our customers' shoes and really looking at it from the customer's perspective, rather than, you know, just coming up with a bland term like, you know, kind of integrity or responsibility, that sort of thing. So I guess we weren't going to talk about, well, not that we weren't going to talk about it, but I'd kind of said that, you know, I wanted this to be something that wasn't just sort of COVID-19 related and locked in May 2020, but just linking to, I'd be remiss, I guess, of me not to ask. So you talk there very, very much around, you know, a lot of that experience that you create for people is around the working environment. And I guess I'm assuming you've probably got people having to come out of that working environment, or it's been changed radically. Just very briefly, how has it affected you? How have you kind of maintained that brand momentum that you've clearly got through a period where that maybe some of those touch points and some of those reinforcers haven't been available to you. Just I think people will probably be wondering that if they listen to that at a contemporary time.
Yeah, the guys from the comms team have just done a stellar job in ensuring all of the comms channels were just operating amazingly well. So Yammer was fast forwarded months ahead of when it was supposed to be because they just got it going. I think during the COVID crisis, AO has really shown its true colors. We're a business that gets stuff done and has real strength when your back's against the wall is something that we talk about, that JR, our founder, talks a lot about, and the rest of the leadership team is. AO is at its best when you've got something to do and you get it done. We also talk a lot about when we sort it out for the customer and then make it work for us. So COVID has actually enabled us to just demonstrate that in spades. So we managed to move an entire call center inbound and outbound into working from home in 4 days. Four days, done. And everyone's working from home and everyone's doing it successfully. You know, it's dead easy for us in the back office. We're all quite used to working from home anyway. Actually, you might have to plug in an additional monitor, but it's dead easy for us, isn't it? Like, we can just carry on. We're all very used to it. But actually, trying to move people who are used to the camaraderie that you would experience in a call center away from all of that could be trying. You know, that could be really hard. Add on to the fact that we're busier than ever before. There are people who are worried about delivery. There are people who are worried because they can't get to a shop. There are people who have never bought online electrical items online before. So let's add in a load more calls to the call center as well. And actually, our NPS is, I can't tell you the exact number, wonderful. Yeah. Like we are flying. The guys are delivering an amazing service, absolutely spectacular. But what we've talked about is we wouldn't have succeeded if our business and the people that work for us weren't amazing anyway. This has just given us an opportunity to shine. So everything that we felt inside, you know, it's very easy when you're churning along and the business is going great and everything's going well and you're just ticking along, you know, it's fine. We can do this and we can be very good at this. You know, you tinker in you amend and you update, but it's fine. Actually, something like this has given us another story.
Yeah.
You know, we'll look back in 5 years' time and COVID-19 will be another example of when our brand came into its own from the inside out, inside first, because our people had to act like this first before we could make sure that the NPS was at the, you know, amazing numbers that we've got at the minute done it all under the personal circumstances as well, you know, challenging personal circumstances of working from home and worry and stuff.
Absolutely.
So this will be, as I mentioned, this will be another example that we'll look back on in 5 years' time and we'll create into an animation or an emotional film.
Another set of story. So, I mean, that's brilliant. And I can see, I tell from the, you know, the passion in your voice there that's clearly something that you're really proud of. I mean, I'm asking you to sort of give away too much or conjecture too much to inject you. I mean, you'd said the physical working environment was really important. You've managed to get your people working from home. I mean, I'm guessing that once social distancing has ended, hopefully it will end at some point, you will be able to, you will want to get people back into a kind of communal workspace and working together, or is that something that's still up in the air? Okay. I think that's refreshing.
No, absolutely. Because I don't think we'll ever get into a space where we'll be a home working business. I can't, you know, and I'm definitely not privy to all of the conversations that are happening, but I believe that coming together and doing it as a team is an important part of AO. I think what this has enabled us to do is to think about the people that we never would have thought working from home was a possibility for.
Yeah.
I think that's the most interesting bit.
I agree. I was just listening to, I was on a webinar this morning and I was as an attendee listening to you know, talking of the fact that this is the end of, you know, mainstream communal work areas. And I can see, you know, there is a case, I think, for giving people more freedom, more flexibility, allowing people to work from home where it's viable, and obviously reducing commuting time as well. But I do think there's just a sort of a magic that gets lost when we are, you know, not able to collaborate and work together. Yes, I mean, I know it's not always a bed of roses, but I personally think that there'll always be a place for some. I think working remotely and isolated, even in, you know, shared working spaces, is great. I mean, I've worked from home for 15 years. It's for me, it's been fairly straightforward, but I do think I miss that chance to spark and get the energy from other people around me, and I think, you know, a few people are feeling that as well. So right, well, that's an amazing set of stories there, and I've really enjoyed that. I did kind of forewarn you, and I don't think you had any time to think about it. I normally ask people something that we didn't know about them, a little bit of a kind of you know, a bit of a sort of secret, but you told me you kind of wear your heart on your sleeve, and you don't have many, your candor is high level. Have you managed to think of anything that maybe we could sort of just have a quick chat about, or
I thought of a little bit, but it might not be what people don't know, but it might be more of an explanation. See, this is what brand people do. We tend to take what you've given us and mess it about a little bit and
go on, give
something
us a
else.
Give,
this
go
is
on,
definitely
then.
What you want.
on,
I thought I'd explain my eclectic accent.
Yes, I asked you about that, I think. Yeah, when we first met.
Yeah. So, so I was born in Belfast to an African father and a Northern Irish mother.
Yeah.
And then we spent my very young childhood traveling the Middle East. So we were based out in Aden for several years, and then back to Northern Ireland. And then it was when I was a teenager, moved to England. So moved to Halifax in West Yorkshire, where I spent my teenage years putting on a Halifax Yorkshire accent, which I can't even do anymore. And then university in Leicester, and then a stint in Manchester, a stint in Carlisle, and now Rochdale, has developed this thing I have, which we'll just call eclectic. And it definitely gets stronger the more wines I've had.
And when you say it gets stronger, is that more the Northern Irish lilt?
Northern Irish. Northern Irishness comes out in abundance when I've had several glasses of red.
I was at uni with a friend from Northern Ireland, and I can certainly vouch for the accent and the amount of red wine that he could consume as well. So in fact, any form of wine or alcohol that he was able to dispose of quite readily. So yeah, fantastic. Well, that's I remember when I met you, I picked up the Northern Irish lilt from my experience, as I say. So it was nice explanation. I think that's, as you say, a good brand answer to a brand person's answer to an obtuse question. Look, so that's absolutely fantastic, Rafa. If people want to, anybody else wants to sort of find out more about your stories, about you, I mean, obviously linked, I found you, and I know you're on LinkedIn. Any other ways that you can connect? Do you use, you know, any social media that you use regularly on a professional basis, or is it all your all personal? How can people find out a little bit more about you?
Yeah, just LinkedIn. I tend to just put everything. I'm not an avid kind of professional user of social media. I tend to follow a lot of other people and like their stuff. That tends to be what I do. I'm always pushing other people to do it in the business rather than me ever spending any time doing it, telling other people, please, you need to do this, share this, focus on this. So LinkedIn tends to be where I'm about.
Okay. Well, if it's okay with you, and I'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile in the notes for this on the show. So if people do want to reach out to you and say hello and perhaps connect with you, then obviously they can do that through LinkedIn. So that's fantastic. Well, look, it's been wonderful speaking to you, and I've really enjoyed that, and really insightful, and I think as I said at the beginning, an area of internal comms and engagement that sometimes gets overlooked. Yes, this idea of the importance of brand, but it's fundamental, I think, no matter what your organization does. So I really appreciate the time with you, Rafa, and thank you very much.
Not a bother. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Take care. Thank you. So thank you very much for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you found this episode useful and interesting. We'd love to get your thoughts about the show and any questions you have or ideas for topics that you'd like to maybe cover in future episodes. You can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, future episodes, and we'll also let you know about anything interesting we found out about internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review. And if you know anyone else who might be interested in the show or might benefit from it, please let them know. Please share it with them and share them with them the links to the show and engagingic.com. Thank you very much.